It sounds really exciting. You're going to come to Kodiak and do a one-man Star Wars performance.
Yeah.
Could you kind of give me the spiel, like the pitch?
The pitch is it's me on stage, no costume, no set, no props, no talent. I'm regurgitating, I'm retelling the original Bad Hair 1970s, 1980s Star Wars trilogy on stage, a solo show. It's basically about 8 hours of film condensed down into 1 hour.
It should be really interesting. How did it come about?
Well, it came about by I guess I was looking to make a living as an actor. I'd studied theater at university. I'd sort of done acting when I was a kid and in high school. And it's really a difficult sort of business to break into to make any real waves. I was pretty much willing to try anything, to write my own stuff. And yeah, I wrote different scripts, but this is something that I tried on stage, sort of in a comedy club setting. Me doing just the first Star Wars film and seeing if people could keep up with my pace and the way I told it. And people totally could. So I expanded it to be the entire original trilogy. And it took about an hour. That was, to actually retell the story. And that's kind of how it was packaged to tour, to work perfectly as a 1 hour show. So, it's sort of, I guess there's a certain poetry to one man, three films, 1 hour, no costume, no set, no props. That's what it is.
Is it like line for a line, or is it a little bit adapted?
Oh no, it's extremely adapted. It's extremely condensed. I mean, there's huge swaths. There's more of the film that's on the cutting room floor of my sort of telling than there's actually in it. It's extremely abbreviated, and that's because they're kids' stories. They're really simple. And when you take out all the things that make Star Wars Star Wars, i.e. the special effects, the orchestral suites and the actual Hollywood actors, you're left with a really simple story. And really only certain moments of the film that really resonate in people's heads. People, I don't expect people to remember every single line from the film and sit there and watch me doing it every single moment, by myself. That would be truly ridiculous, even more ridiculous than the idea already is.
So I'm not an actor at all. I don't really think in those terms. So could you describe to me or explain to me how you bring words from a page and without any props make it something interesting to look at?
I don't actually know how that works myself. People are either going to pay attention or they aren't. That's the one thing about either having stage presence or talent. I don't think I have any particular extreme talent, but maybe I have presence or just the ability to make myself look stupid, and I don't really care. So that's something that's interesting to watch. I guess I've always been a bit of a cockatiel, or one of those birds that hear something and then I immediately want to repeat it again and again and again. I love doing impressions. So yeah, whenever I meet somebody that has a really interesting way of saying things or totally goofy way of saying things, I want to learn how it is that they do it, and I want to say it back to them, not to mock them, but because I think it's just amazing. And I guess when I was a kid watching Star Wars, let's face it, they're kind of B movies. The acting is really good if you're talking about Alec Guinness, and then it's not so good, and you can choose which actor you don't want to sort of be kind to. So I found lots of meat to sink my teeth into. So yeah, exactly how I do it, how an actor makes it interesting, I don't know. All I know is that I took what I could remember off the top of my head, as for moments from the films, and I just tried to get it up on my feet and pretend like I was an 8-year-old kid, and just being everything, being all the characters, even if my impressions aren't perfect, just do my best and get through the story. And people can follow it. So I don't know if a person who wasn't an actor could do it, but they might if they really like Star Wars and if they really didn't have a problem in making themselves look foolish.
So you mimic the accents of each character whose line you say.
Yeah.
Could you recite some lines?
I could. It's more like things like or if it's just reciting lines, I mean, you can check out my website and you can see a whole clip of it. That's onemanstarwars.com. So you'll get an idea of exactly what the show is all about.
Sound effects. Okay, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's all really bare bone and kind of like very, kind of like the Star Wars films themselves, like before everything was digital.
Yeah, well, this is sort of the analog version of film, or, you know, the acoustic version of Star Wars, and that it's just me. You know, I don't expect, as I said, everybody to know Star Wars very, very well to come see this show. If you've only seen them once, or even if you haven't seen them, there's enough of what I'm doing, like my own sort of take on these things, enough of a light, I wouldn't call it parody, but like a bit of a piss-taking, as they would say. You know, it's an homage. It's a loving homage, but I do definitely poke a little bit of fun at the you know, the various quality of the Star Wars films. And it is made to be for everybody, for all ages, or, you know, all sort of particular backgrounds.
Yeah, for me, I saw the films when I was little and, like, frequently. So, like, I was at that age where, like, it could terrify me. Like, the monsters terrified me. And then I have friends who I introduced the films to when they were adults, and they just, like, doesn't get to them the same way. So what's your background with Star Wars? What's your attachment to it?
I grew up in northern Canada, and we had a farm. We didn't have much time to actually farm, but we did live on a farm, and it was remote. So, you know, anybody that comes from a remote place or lives in a place where there's a long winter, so you would know it, that you have a lot of spare time. We did have, you know, snow machines, and we had outdoor sports, but we also had a lot of time to sit indoors. And we didn't get any TV reception, didn't get any radio reception. We just had a couple of films on VHS. One of them was the first Star Wars film. So I watched a whole bunch of it. And I found myself, the more I watched it, I'm not sure if I was going crazy or stretching to sort of find something that I could relate to, but I certainly related to, say, Luke Skywalker, and that he felt ineffectual. He felt like his station in life kind of wasn't so great, because he's living on a farm waiting for adventure to come to his front door or for him to be able to leave this place that he was living in. And for me, I certainly had that feeling, wanting to get away, wanting some kind of adventure. And I was a kid, you know, a kid at the time. So it was amazing, the story, as simple as it was, that adventure literally comes, knocks on his front door, and whisks him into space. And suddenly he's the most important person in the world. He has some special powers inside of him he didn't know he had, the Force. And he's able to sort of save the day and stop the evil, oppressive powers that be in the galaxy. I mean, who wouldn't want that? And certainly it didn't matter how many times I watched the films. Being where I was, it definitely had a resonance. And, you know, as I got older, I realized that they're really fun films. And, yeah, I guess it's just a nostalgic sort of callback to that time when, I'm not saying things were simpler, but for me, my life was more simple, and I certainly didn't look at the world in the way I do now. It was just a very simple world where black and white stories made a lot of sense. So you can almost immerse yourself back into that simplistic mentality, you know, when you were a kid, when I watched the trilogy today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that first film was really relatable in that, like, as a kid, you're watching this young boy kind of just, like, going about the farm. Like, it's very relatable. It's a very simple situation. But, like, for a kid, it's something that's so easy to grasp. Like, even myself, I was in a city. I still was like, yes, adventure. I wanted to go out and, like, make my fortune. And that's, like, I think that kids really relate to that.
I always wondered what it was like for people that did live in a city when they watched the films, you know, whether or not they felt the same way that I did. I mean, I guess everybody can sometimes feel a little bit marginalized, you know, in whatever form. And it seemed like that this was a very an expansive kind of film where you might be forced to relate, no pun intended, but, you know, forced out of your comfort zone or even the zone that you once resented. You're suddenly thrust into a situation where, you know, you have to step up and that's where growth happens. So I guess, you know, if anything, watching this film, it's a story, a very simple and quick story of growth. And, you know, we rarely have those moments or rarely even know that we're in these moments when we are learning something and we're being forced to, I don't know, I guess put the pressure on.
Is there one particular scene that you enjoy the most, that you enjoyed performing the most?
It's really what things culminate to. You know, if you've seen the whole trilogy, it culminates to Luke confronting Darth Vader, and there's the cackling, horrible, monstrous Emperor who is delighting in the fact that no matter what, in his mind, he's going to come out on top. You know, one person's going to get killed or the other, and he's still going to be, you know, kicking it old school as the Emperor, but it all changes. So for me, there's a whole bunch of jokes that are sort of peppered throughout my script, and then even bits that happen within the first, or rather the last 20 minutes of the show that lead up to sort of the delicious fun of being the Emperor, because he's so rotten. It's rare that you get to be such a polarized character, like just completely without merit, a completely rotten human being, and that's what he is. So there's something almost cathartic about being able to play that role, even just for a few moments on stage.
Could you talk a little bit about the history of this particular piece? Like, when did it start, and where did it first debut?
Well, it's been going on for 17 years, so I wrote it, you know, 17 years ago. It's coming up on 17 years. I wrote it in a couple of different places simply because the idea took a little bit of time to sort of germinate and then the script to sort of evolve or mutate. Its first permutation, I was living in Halifax, Canada, Nova Scotia, so on the far east coast. Then I was doing a production of some radio plays in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And that was the first time I ever tried doing this in any form in front of a kind of a comedy crowd. And, yeah, when I tried it, it went extremely well. The first time I ever did it as a full one-hour show was actually on the BC coast in Vancouver. And I did that about maybe 4 months later. So let's say within about 8 months of the original Kick at the Can, I had a full one-hour show that I was just performing. I really didn't think I would do it much more than, you know, maybe a couple of times. And there is a series of theater festivals called The Fringe. I've done Fringe festivals before. They kind of tour across the United States, across Canada, and around the world. And if you time things right, you can work for an entire year doing these festivals. And these festivals provide you with an opportunity to, for a very small budget, do your show. All you have to do is get yourself there and have some promotional materials, and as long as you have a decent show, you might actually make money. Well, this idea, I thought, it's pretty portable. I can probably do the Fringe. And when I did these Fringe festivals across North America, I had met somebody when I was back in Florida that about 8 months later, when I was on the west coast of Canada, I was still being contacted by this guy. He was interested in me coming to bring my little Star Wars show to Chicago. And so I did the show there. Lucasfilm found out about what I was doing because I never asked them for permission. I just didn't think it would ever come to that. And then I went to New York City and did the show for 6 months off Broadway. And things have just sort of, I don't know, I guess there's like concentric circles is coming from a central spot where, you know, I'm the sort of the drop, and all these waves, as simple as they are, you know, I've kind of gone all over the world over these years, 17 years. I've done 5 different continents. I've done the show in about 500 cities over 5,000 times. And yet, you know, here I am going to Alaska for the first time, and it'll make this the 47th state that I've done the show in. So that's the power, the reach of Star Wars that I've just managed to latch my own little life onto. I guess Star Wars, as much as it has a continuing life, my show has a continuing life alongside of it.
Yeah, I think you're going to really like Alaska. As far as striking out for adventure, I think Alaska is a great place to go.
It's about as, I don't want to say stereotypical, but when you think of, you know, striking out for adventure, if Alaska is it, that is it. Because
yeah.
It's civilized, it's got the ocean, it's got the crazy mountains, all the stuff that can kill you. It's awesome. Yeah, I'm so excited.
And so are you hitting Kodiak first, or what's the tour?
Yeah, let me see. I'm actually going to Petersburg and then to Kodiak and then going to Anchorage and then, is it Talkeetna? Is that right?
Talkeetna, yeah.
I got that correct. Yeah, yeah. And that's going to be the end of the tour. It's. I think the whole thing only takes me about 9 days to do the whole thing. But, you know, there's 2 days in Anchorage and only one in Kodiak and one in Petersburg and et cetera. It's just, it's kind of fast and furious. And in a way, it feels like cheating. I feel like I should be, you know, making my way up there, with a backpack and, you know, a backpack full of hopes and dreams and crawl through the snow to get up there. But instead, I'm going to be on Alaska Airlines, you know, flying up there like a big cheater. But, you know, hopefully I'll have moments for some genuine adventure and hopefully get to meet some awesome folks that are there. I have no doubt I will.
And to go back a little bit to, you mentioned that this is a bit of a comedy performance. And again, I'm not an actor and I'm not a comedian. So how much do you play it up for laughs during your performance?
Well, there's only so much I have to play for laughs. I kind of find that if you're honest in your impression, your homage, that what was already there, what sort of made you kind of chortle a bit, or even what you recognize as the truth is what makes you laugh. I don't try to play up things too much for laughs. I have some jokes that I've inserted in that obviously they're there for laughter or to be a moment of, you know, sort of diverting from the story just to make a little joke or to comment on something. But as far as me trying to pretend to be the characters to do my best impression of them, I really think it's the things that you get right and the things that you're just being honest about that are the most humorous. That's why we laugh at observational humor, I believe, because there's truth. And sometimes when it's articulated, that's when we find it funny.